Dear Rhiannon, I write to you this morning, 2 weeks to the day, away until I can see my grandmother, Betty Ann, again. Widowed and near 90, she recently discovered she's an artist. My maternal lineage is 400 years of silence in South Carolina, but there have been artists among my women. We just take some digging to find. The first time I saw you perform, my cousin Micah in awe leaned from her seat and whispered to me, "That woman is digging with that banjo." You seemed a woman concerned with other worlds. You were off excavating past lives, singing back the ghosts of the unsung, giving voice to the quiet. Your art runs roots from North Carolina throughout the diaspora. It gives breadth and depth to the South. Your blues give hue and color to whitewashed oral memories. I'd love the chance to journey with you through your songs that bear witness to centuries of Black women who, unsung in silence, have been here, been singing, been knowing deep this land. As my grandmother, Betty Ann, always reminds me, magnolias grow in dirt. Best, Adia Victoria. Welcome to Call and Response from Sono Sound System, the show about the communal spirit of music making and listening. I'm Adia Victoria. I'm a musician, a poet, and a writer based in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a Black woman from the Deep South, leaning into the blues to make sense of this world. I'm so glad to have y'all here with me for this first episode of Call and Response. Each episode of the show is like a dialogue. It's a back and forth between myself and artists I admire, between their present work and the lineage of musical ancestors that came before them. For y'all that aren't familiar with the blues process of writing and understanding the world, much of the blues is written in a format that's called call and response. And what this would be back in the old days when the blues first got started, you'd have the blues singer on stage, and then they would call out a line,
got to run and run, got to run and run,
and then give the audience the opportunity to answer that line. So you'd have two lines that are repeated, and then the audience would be able to complete the line for you. It was a way to perform any communal aspect. It was less you sat and listened to what they had to say on stage. It was more like you were a part of the song, so your perspective mattered. I wanted to name this podcast Call and Response because I'm a blues musician. I'm following in the legacy of blues women like Bessie Smith.
My man's got a heart like a rocket sea.
And Ma Rainey.
I had the blues so bad, I sit right down on.
And my girl, Victoria Spivey.
I don't trust nobody, baby, but the good Lord above.
These were women who came out one generation removed from slavery. And the first thing that they did was tell their stories in the way that rang true to them. So their spirit kind of imbued me. It informs me. It buoys me. It allows me to speak back to the world.
After they get what they want, why they don't like you no.
We're all getting a lot of information and doom scrolling right now on social media. And I want you guys to know that you have a voice that is just as powerful to speak back to all of it. If you feel so inclined, pick up a pen, pick up a guitar, make art. Like, you are welcomed at this table. You're needed. Your story needs to be told. Y'all, people say never meet your idols, so I guess I messed up with this one, but I'm sure glad that I did. For this first episode, I am grateful to be talking to someone I admire a great deal, Rhiannon Giddens. Rhiannon is a banjo player and a folk musician, well known for her work with the Carolina Chocolate Drops. She's also a MacArthur genius, researching and reclaiming Black folk and country music traditions. She's a Grammy Award winner, but most importantly, she's just a fellow Black woman from the Carolinas paying homage to the long line of Black women who marched before her. I love her for that. This interview marks the occasion of Rhiannon's latest album, They're Calling Me Home. With every episode of this show, we create a playlist inspired by the conversation. And this week, it feels right to share music that reframes the South. Songs by folks like Linda Martell, the first Black woman to sing at the Grand Ole Opry, and songs from Nashville royalty like Roseanne Cash. You can hear this playlist over on Mixcloud at mixcloud.com/Sonos. We'll leave a link to the playlist in the show notes. And now, y'all, here's my conversation with Rhiannon Giddens. Hi, Rhiannon. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
I'm doing.
it's the pandemic. Okay, you know, it's like what do you answer to how you're doing these days?
I'm still here.
That's kind of it. Yeah.
I read a quote where you said, "Nostalgia ain't our bag," talking about Black folk, and you know, it's interesting the role of memory. You know, not just as an American, but as a Southerner, I feel like we're such a backwards-facing group of people. Like, we're obsessed, we're haunted by our past. But the interesting thing is, like, I don't associate your music with nostalgia, as rooted as it is in, you know, our culture, our history. Like, there's nothing nostalgic about it. And I'm curious how you've been able to navigate making music that is oriented, you know, in our history, but it's also forward thinking. How do you, as a roots musician, how do you negotiate that?
Yeah, I think nostalgia for anybody is a killer of truth. A rosy view of history, I feel like it's not necessarily an honest view of history. And for us, honest view of history is painful, you know, but where I'm coming from with the music is if we continue to do that as a culture, like, of course, African-American culture is not monolithic. So for me, like, musically, what I try to do is just tell as much truth as I can with the whole idea of the Sankofa, an Akan proverb. It means go back and fetch it, bring it forward. You know, it's not enough to go into the past. You have to bring that to where you are now and beyond.
That speaks to why, you know, you shun nostalgia and sentiment in that way, because you're still busy trying to dig up your past.
I just think that when we look back and find the truth, you know, and really look at the history, we find all that pain.
Right.
But the other thing is we find all this amazing stuff. We find how integral we are to American culture. We find all the stories that don't get told.
I mean, I feel you, like, that's been one of my biggest hurdles, I think, being a Black musician in Americana in Nashville, is that, you know, this is a town that is obsessed with white myth making.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean? And I feel like roots music, blues music has just been so appropriated and bastardized here that I was offended to be included in Americana at the start of my career. And going back and reading so many of your interviews as I've done in the past few weeks, you know, you've talked so much about digging up our past and reclaiming it. And it's kind of like centered on the banjo in a cool way with you. What has it meant to you to reclaim the banjo? Even the way that the one that you play, you said it's a 1858 Levi Brown banjo, and it's got that deep brown, you know, sound. How has that stood for reclaiming your Southern roots and legacy? And also as an ability to tell the goddamn truth.
Well, I mean, I think the banjo, for me, is the perfect way to tell the American story because it represents it in miniature, you know?
Yes.
It's like even the way it came about, created in the Caribbean by people who had just gotten there from Africa, and then traveling up to the United States and then going through all of these different changes as it has. I mean, I don't think people understand the difference, you know, in how the banjo sounded 250 years ago and how it sounds today. And I don't think they truly understand who all has held a banjo in their hand. I mean, it's like everybody.
Right.
Everybody from the Irish guy in New York to the player down in New Orleans to the cowboy going west to the middle-class white woman in her parlor to the blues player down south. I mean, it's just like...
It's traveled.
Yeah, it's really traveled. You name a crevice of American culture, the banjo is there.
Right.
For me, it just shows that whole shape of American culture being so much, there's an innovation within the African-American culture where they are combining aspects of African and European culture, you know, music, rhythm, whatever. And then that becomes adopted by the white culture around them. And then it changes and then it kind of goes back and forth. There's this cultural exchange. And of course, there's other people involved. You know, you've got polkas, you've got this, yes. you've got that. But that's kind of the general shape, right? Especially when commercialism gets in with minstrelsy in the 1820s and 30s. And then it becomes, you know, enshrined in commercial American music. And but that shape is like the banjos at the center of it, you know, in so many different ways. So to be able to just say, follow the instrument and you follow American culture, I mean, that's right. just, you know, it's mind-blowing. And for me, that banjo that I have, that attracted me, because, I mean, I've been to Africa, went to the Gambia, I studied in Akonti, which is like a pre-banjo ancestor, and I was right. really blown away by it, but it didn't catch me like this banjo, like this 1850s banjo. And for me, it's because it's an American
That's right.
instrument, right? You know, yes. I'm like, I'm not African.
That's right.
Like there's aspects that I recognize, but you know,
there's nuance there.
Yes.
It's so funny. Like I went back today and I was listening to Doc Boggs, who I love. And I was listening to his banjo work on Down South. And then I went and, you know, I put on some of your records. I was like, this is a completely different sound. Like your music, it's so corporal and immediate, especially when it comes to telling the stories of like Black women's bodies, like our flesh.
Yeah. For me, the banjo that I'm playing, just like the stories of enslaved people and women in particular, those songs wouldn't have been written on another banjo. They're on that banjo. Like that banjo spoke. And I was just like,
yeah.
Who am I to gainsay this banjo?
It wants what it wants.
It does. And ever since then, it's just like, it's my ex, you know? I can't
put it down.
No.
It's interesting to me, Rhiannon, like, you've been a revelation for me. Like, I remember, you know, the first time that I heard you sing. And I think one of the songs that really gutted me was At the Purchaser's Option.
Fingers nimble, fingers quick.
It tells the story of Black women's body, the way that history has interacted with our bodies in such a matter-of-fact way.
You can take my body, you can take my bones, you can take my blood, but not my soul. You can take my.
And I'm curious, what is it like for you performing that song for primarily white audiences?
Yeah.
Girl, you know I had to ask. You know I had to ask.
Oh, no. It's an important question because it's tough, you know?
Right.
I mean, the whole show is tough because I do that. I talk about minstrelsy. I talk about goon songs. I talk about all of it. My audiences are great. They're all, like, really eager to learn. By this point, if they're coming to my show, they know what I do, you know? So I'm lucky that they want to know these things. And, you know, I always talk about the ad for the song, and there's always this big gasp.
This is an advertisement for a young woman for sale. Because back then, when you needed some cash, this is in the late 1700s, you sold something. And sometimes that something was a human being. And this was up in the Northeast.
Contrary to what people say, oh, why we always got to talk about race? We don't actually, really, not in a substantive way. I mean, we don't talk about slavery. We don't talk about the real impact of it. And we certainly don't get taught it in school. So I feel it is a duty of mine, but that song is very, it's impossible to sing lightly or checked out. You know, it's an ancestral raising.
Yes.
That song. So it is, it takes it out of me. And I've actually, it's been a wonderful break this year to not be singing those songs, to be honest. I kind of was fine. I was getting to a point where I was about burnt out.
Yes. I love that honesty of just being like, sometimes these songs, they wear you out. And, you know, you've hinted at in interviews, like, the work you do is, it's tiring. It's not just the touring, but it is the psychological toll of telling these stories and doing them justice every night. But it's heavy work. And I think back to, you know, someone like a Nina Simone, you know, another Carolina Black woman who told the truth, but paid for it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the first time I heard For a Woman, That was the first Nina Simone song I had ever, heard. And she said, "My skin is black, my arms are long.
My skin is black. My arms are long. My hair is woolly. My back is strong."
I was like, that's me. Mm-hmm. Like, no one's ever talked about my body in that way, but it is heavy work.
Yeah. But it's a privilege, you know?
Yeah.
But you have to take care because, whatever my job is, it's not done yet. So I'm keep being afforded opportunities to tell stories. So I have to take care of myself to the point so that I can continue to tell the stories.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm a tool and I need to be a tool that's in shape. But I wanted to tell this story to you because I know that you would appreciate it. I often get asked, how do you feel about having mostly white audiences? And they're not all, but I was talking about the frustration of that on a panel, and there was a man, he works for the San Francisco Opera, and he said he hadn't really engaged with my work before this panel, so he was getting ready for it. And he was like, "I'll tell you a perspective for me as a black man that I don't want to go to your show and sit there and listen to this music that brings me pain and then know that I'm being watched."
Yes.
And that was an aspect I had never thought about. And it actually made me feel better.
Right.
You know, because I was like, oh, I never really thought about that. It's not that people are rejecting me. It's more like they know that there's a certain journey that's going to be taken.
Right. There,
you know, and that awareness of where you are when you're undertaking that journey, that was a revelation for me. That was very interesting.
That's been one of the things that I'm obsessed about my career, though, is like pushing folk forward and expanding the circle of folk. Because, I played Newport Folk Festival in 2019, and I noticed that the most presence black people have here are like dead, musicians.
Yeah.
And I can understand like why that space would not feel welcoming for our people, and I get so exhausted dealing with like roots Americana. Whose voices are we discounting here? Who's deciding what Americana is? Yeah. Why is it so white?
Yeah. Child, I mean, I've had a very difficult relationship with Americana because I kind of felt like a token for a long time, Oh, we got Rhiannon.
Yeah, that's right.
We good.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, and I
struggled with that because I was like, do I show up and then do the thing that I do and keep pushing,
Right. Yeah.
Or do I just boycott it? I showed up and I did what I do because what I do itself is an act of resistance,
Yes.
It's very hard to be within a capitalistic system that I don't really agree with, but I know that I have to use it.
Yes.
To get my message out. It's very frustrating, you know? So it's like the Grammys are in there, Americana Awards, all of that stuff. It's like there are good people within these systems. The systems are flawed. The systems are broken. There are bad people within these systems. So we have to navigate them the best we can and use them to get the good word out as best we can while staying authentic to ourselves. Yeah, it's a freaking high wire act, you know?
I love the way that you've done this dance, though, in a way. I go back and I listen to some of your earlier solo records, I think that it was music and themes that they're used to hearing from us. Mm-hmm. I think it was a comfortable sound and an approachable sound for, white folks. You fast forward to, your record, There Is No Other. And as a black woman, when I see that title, my mind immediately goes to Toni Morrison talking about the othering of black people. Like, you've made leaps and bounds. And I feel like you're speaking to, I don't know if I'm being, arrogant. I felt you were speaking to black women.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the way that you have taken what they've given you and the box they try to put you in, and you've just like built on it and built a way to speak to black women like me and like these young girls that are coming up and they're looking at you. And you've negotiated this just beautifully for us. God,
Jesus. Well, no, thank you for saying that. I do feel like I've been swimming against the tide. It's only the last couple of years that I feel like I've been able to see that I can have a career doing it the way I feel like it should be done for me, you know? And most importantly for me, there's other women of color who have been able to use or build on or whatever. Like, if I'm inspiring in even a tiny little way, even if just somebody's like, ooh, she looks like me, she's holding a banjo, that's cool. Like,
that's right.
I'm content with that, you know? It's just like, that's what I love. Like, what you're doing, what Amethyst is doing, what, you know, Allison's doing, what Kai is doing, what Reese's doing. I mean, there is this like amazing upswell of Black women killing it right now. And I'm like, I sit in the corner, play my banjo, and I just like, I'm very happy to see it.
Yes. Yes. <You know? laughs> Yes. I was listening to Kaya Carter this morning. I absolutely adore her work. And she and I've had a few exchanges where we've talked about having like imposter syndrome and not feeling like we belong. And God, like I have to knock that out of my head like every day. Like, I do belong. This is me. Like, this is in my blood. Like, my family goes back 400 years in South Carolina. Like,
that's right.
This is my legacy.
That's one of the biggest weapons that the establishment has used, is taking our right to be an authentic American voice. No hyphen needed.
Right.
And it feels we're always off balance because we're always asking for permission. We ain't got to ask for permission, you know, because we were always here. That's the thing that I push as much as I can with this history of the banjo, is the idea that the hyphens, I mean, I understand why we use them, just like I understand why we use record bins, but I don't think we need any of it, you know? And I think it's being used to say, okay, you're American, you're African-American. That means that you're not actually, you're kind of a part, you're like this kind of American.
An offshoot.
Right, which means that, so what does that mean? So does just to be American means that white is the default, you know, like white Anglo-Saxon, whatever, you
Girl,
know?
I started calling them European Americans. Yeah. So.
I mean, yeah, if we're going to do it like that, you know, then we all got to do it, or none
That's
of
right.
us do it.
That's right,
you know?
That's what I'm saying.
I'm starting to understand people who are like, let's get rid of the hyphens, because I'm like, that's the way I feel about our music.
That's right.
You know, it's American music, and this has this flavor, and this has that flavor, and this is this, and you know, and if we know the real history, then we know where those pieces came from, you know, and we can label those. I think that's important, but it's all American music. It's an American story. Don't matter what you look like, right? Because all of it's a construct. Black is a construct. White is a construct. It's all made up to control.
That's right.
And usually to steal somebody's stuff. You know, like race is just like, it's like the jack to get into the door, or like the lock picks. It's like, I'm going to steal your stuff. So I'm going to dehumanize you by othering you. And then thank you. I'm off to the bank.
Girl, when I tell you, I learned the story of Frank Johnson by researching you. Like, so he was a fiddle player, for y'all that don't know. He was a fiddle player in Antebellum South in North Carolina. And he was like a rock star.
Yep.
They just made him white.
Like the man bought himself out of slavery with
on
his
credit.
Fiddle. And his family, like, so he was so famous, they called the music that he played Frank Johnson music. I mean, he had a whole genre named after the man. I mean, when he died, it was like huge ceremony, you know, huge, like, funeral. And it's just like, the man was erased.
Yeah,
so
he black.
Annoying. Yeah, he black.
He black. Let me go ahead, because I've taken enough of your time. Like, get back to the cheering and your life over there in Ireland. I want to ask you, what song is giving you life and light right now?
Oh, my God. Okay. Is this song called Omoide?
Okay.
It's the theme song of this show called Midnight Diner.
Kimi ga haita shiroi ki ga ima yukuri kaze ni notte.
So this is a Japanese show about this guy. He has a midnight diner, and he opens at midnight, closes at 7, and it's just literally about the people who come into his diner.
I love it.
And there's no through line. It's just, there's always a dish that's highlighted, and they kind of tell you how to make it at the end. I mean, it's just like, it's kind of, you kind of have to experience it to, but the theme song, which is what I love, it's based on an Irish folk song. The tune is an Irish folk song, and the words are Japanese. That's what giving me life right now is singing Omoide.
You gotta get it where you can these days.
I'm such a weirdo.
No, I love it. Well, thank you so much for holding space for me. This has been, I can check, you know, talking the blues with Rhiannon Gannon's off my bucket list. I can just drop dead now. I'm done. D. Victoria done. Thank you. This was very affirming for me.
Oh, me too. Like, let me tell you, that's one of the hardest things about, I mean, Ireland's really nice.
That's right.
Let's get that out the way. They're nice. Okay. They're nice people. Everything's mm-hmm. nice. Mm-hmm. But like, I miss us.
Yes.
A lot. So it's just like a little piece. It's just a little injection for me. So I appreciate it.
Look, when this panini's done, we're going to make some biscuits together. We're going to make some red eye gravy, eat some okra.
Oh my God, I'm going to start calling it the panini. New term of the day. Thank you very much.
Y'all, that was Rhiannon Gittens. Ooh. If you want to get to know Rhiannon a little bit better, I highly recommend just walking back her entire discography, starting with the Carolina Chocolate Drops. I also recommend a little bit of reading because her work is so grounded in history and in folk culture. One of the books that I read to prepare for this interview was called Shared Traditions, Southern History and Folk Culture by South Carolinian folklorist Charles Joyner. Rhiannon's album, They're Calling Me Home, is out now. Y'all, check it out. Sit with it. Walk with it. Just lean on it a little bit. I know I have been. So the conversation this week with Rhiannon, it's got me to a place where I want to question so much of my own memories. I want to question the dominant story that was told to me about where I'm from. And you don't just have to be from the South to do this work. I feel like we're all sold a story of what this world means, what it can achieve, who we are within it. I think that it's kind of part of our journey to dig past that narrative, to dig past that veneer. So y'all, I want to challenge you to do what Rhiannon has asked me to do. Peel back and question the stories that you're told about your life and the land that you live on. I don't know where you're listening from, but I'm sure wherever you are has a story. And I'm sure that there's a quieter story underneath it. So go out, find some silence, find some still. Challenge the way that the world works and the way it tells you you fit within it. This has been Call and Response on Sono Sound System. Thank you all so much for joining us this week. And thank you to our guest, Rhiannon Gittens. You can hear the full version of the show with my playlist on Sonos Radio or find us at mixcloud.com/Sonos. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. If you like the show, rate it and share it with your friends. Let us know what you like about the show. Let me know what music is meeting you in this moment. I'm Adia Victoria across all social media. I'm all ears. The show is produced by Work by Work, Scott Newman, Gemma Rose Brown, Babette Thomas, Megan Lubin, and me, Adia Victoria. The show is mixed by Sam Baer. Thank you also to Joe Dawson and Saida Blount at Sonos. Till next time, you guys, keep your heart and your ears wide open. Y'all be good.